Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. From all over the world and all the different stations that carry this program, we're about empowering people. There's so much negative news, toxic news. There's so much, well, almost fatalistic thinking out there. And I believe that there is so much to be optimistic about. Not to be in denial of what's happening that's wrong at every level, but once we're aware of what the problem is and who's not going to help us and who's a part of the problem, then we can resolve, I can do something for myself. And that's what this program is about. We always start with the latest on health and healing. The information I share on this topic comes from the finest quality sources, peer-reviewed literature, respected institutions. Why? And I always cite the source. Because for decades, anyone speaking about health and nutrition, anti-aging, the environment, was considered unscientific. They weren't credible. And so if you promoted meat and dairy and sugar, if you promoted the use of pesticides or toxic elements in the environment, that was considered scientifically acceptable. But if you promoted a healthy lifestyle, de-stressing, a way of using your mind and your imagination in a creative way, that was considered esoteric and with no foundational basis. Hence, we were excluded. Think of the consequences. Think of the people, including baby boomers my age, who today are suffering from obesity, diabetes, memory loss, a heart attack and stroke, arthritis, fibromyalgia, simply because they made wrong choices. We're the program that helps at least provide information. You can choose what you want. I'm a big believer in freedom of choice. If something doesn't make sense, if something's not reasonable, don't use it. If something is, try it. So today we're going to talk about pomegranates, fighting aging, and in a new study, and also of all the superfoods you could put in a salad, one of the ones we generally don't are red onions. Why red onions? Well, there's an important study at Guelph University in Ontario that shows of all the onions tested, it is the most nutritious. I'll explain more. And if you're an athlete and you want a really good, let's say, smoothie before or after, watermelon and pomegranate juice improves athletic performance and a lot more on health and healing. And then today I'm going to do shorter segments on several topics because I have so much I want to focus on in concerning the environment. A lot of people were frightened by the program I did on Tuesday evening with Professor Emeritus Guy McPherson showing that if the Arctic goes ice-free in July, August, or September, then that will impact global warming to such a degree that a lot of grains, not all grains, not everywhere, but a lot of grains that otherwise would be able to be a food source for people will not be a food source. And then it starts because you're then into a negative feedback loop. And I'm going to explain all this today in depth. I'm setting more time aside for that. No guests today, just so we have this time. From our audio-video files today, we're going to listen to John Coleman, the founder of the Weather Channel, deny climate change. I want to give him an opportunity. He's on CNN. You'll hear what he has to say. But also, I'm going to have a person who sounds completely legitimate in his argument, and I believe he believes in his own argument, on the Paris Climate Agreement, why it won't change the climate. But I believe that that person is wrong. And I'm a big believer that we should hear many different voices. From those voices, we can choose any or none. So then I'm going to deconstruct the arguments that you hear every day for why you don't have to worry because the climate is decades, even 100, 200 years away from really adversely affecting you. And so that's where I want to invite all of our friends from Facebook, because this week we launched video streaming on Facebook. Next week we launch live video streaming on Progressive Radio Network and then also on YouTube. And for those who are watching on Facebook, we're adding a new segment today, and that's a talkback segment. Now, normally, I will do talkback, and you can call in on a number. But a lot of times we have so many people calling in, not everybody can get their question asked or their statement made. So I'm inviting one of our staff, Elizabeth, as she's already selected some questions people have written over Facebook, and I'll be addressing those. And then she will give you an address. So any question or statement you have you'd like to share, and here's the key. I don't accept statements or issues where people are just whining, moaning, blaming, or complaining. That doesn't help anyone. If you want to empower people, positive solutions. So if you're looking for a solution or if you have a solution, by all means, share that with us. And she'll give you the email address so you can then have your question or statement read on the air. So let's begin. First up, pomegranate. Now, pomegranate is quite simply a superfood. I grow pomegranate. I'm a certified organic farmer. I'm also a beekeeper. I've had as many as 140 beehives and as few as just a few. Right now I have about 14. And I have them because, A, they pollinate. They are terrific. I don't use their honey. I don't use their bee propolis, which is one of the greatest antibiotics in the world, second only to, I would say, Manuka honey at a high grade. It's graded 5, 10, 15, 20, and then way up to 500. 500 is very expensive. A little tiny jar will run you about $100. But if you want the ultimate antibiotic, natural antibiotic, the 500-rated Manuka honey, that would do it. Also, colloidal silver at 500 parts per million is great. And then bee propolis. But then why not have all of them at home? Because they're not going to go bad. Honey can't go bad. It's the only food I know of in nature that will never go bad. They've opened up pyramids and found honey that was still good. So you put all those together, you've got a phenomenal thing that can help you if you have a sore throat, if you have the flu coming on, if you have a cold, if your immune system is down. But in any case, pomegranate is fitting right up in there. Now, the best way of eating pomegranate is simply to take a fresh pomegranate and you would take out the little orbs, the little seeds, and you could either juice them or eat them just the way they are. And if you can't do that, if you don't have access, you can buy them that way. You can buy them organic and frozen. You can buy them fresh in little cups you can use. And you can buy the pomegranate concentrate. For most people, that's the best way of getting your pomegranate, as a concentrate. Now, one of the things pomegranate does, it's terrific for your arteries. Now, just imagine a hose, right? A hose that's brand new. You can bend it. It's pliable. Terrific. Now, sit it in the sun for 3 months and come back. It's stiff. Can't move it, and it's already breaking. That's your arteries. That's what happens when you have that French fry, the hot dog, the hamburger, the pizza. You create these premature aging products, this oxidative stress. Visualize, it's called glycation, by the way, G-L-Y, glycation, C-A-T-I-O-N. Glycation is when you combine proteins, amino acids, and sugars, and at a heat, and you end up causing your cells to prematurely age. Just visualize a chicken. Now, I'm a vegan, but most people are not, so this is a good visualization for you. Plump and moist, put it in the oven, 2 hours later, bring out crisp and brown. That's what happens when you eat a pizza, French fries, potato chips, bagels, buns. You're eating refined carbohydrate. Mind you, you have amino acids in there. You have simple sugars. So when you shift away from that kind of diet to a plant-based diet, you reverse it. You go from causing glycation, which prematurely ages the cells, to rejuvenation, which allows the cells to heal and to detoxify. So the pomegranate does that in the arteries. So if you want to protect yourself against a heart attack, a stroke, any kind of damage inside the epithelium is the inner lining of your arteries. It repairs it. Pomegranate does. It protects it. So you want a good heart tonic pomegranate does it, but this is something else it does. This is according to The Natural Blaze. I'll quote this. Before the 21st century, you'd probably be called a person crazy if they talked about aging as a treatable condition. And while this viewpoint isn't fully mainstream, it's not totally unimaginable either. There are many factors that cause the signs and sensations of aging, each of which would have to be individually correlated if aging were truly to be considered reversible. The secret to this lies in this aging process, reversing it, lies with the pomegranates. But we'll have to lay some groundwork before the new pomegranate research starts to make sense. One of the reasons we age is that the mitochondria, that's your energy factory, that's your little stove, your oven, your little furnace, that's what creates the actual energy, what we call ATP, adenosine triphosphate. And so as we get older, by the way, aging, you're actually aging. You're getting old, now at 27. Chronological age 27, biological age, you're probably around 50. So no longer can you just slide through your 20s and 30s thinking you can eat anything, do anything, drink anything, smoke anything, and it's okay. You don't have to exercise. You can spend all day just exercising your thumbs on that little idiot box that you use. Well, hello, you're already old at 27. You're already diseasing. You're processing cancer, heart disease, clogging your arteries, causing inflammation in your brain, in your joints, and in your musculature. And you're also destroying mitochondria. So when you get tired, when your brain gets tired, when your heart gets tired, when your muscles are tired, more often than not, it's because the mitochondria don't have the energy they need for supplying you the energy to function. So the mitochondria are essential in the aging process. And these are the powerhouses. But as they age, mitochondria start to wear out and they break down. And they can even become toxic. And to prevent this, mitochondria basically commit suicide. They go to pieces, and these pieces are brought back together into a new healthy mitochondria in the process, which is a mitophagy. Now, the problem is this process doesn't always function correctly, especially in older individuals. Mitochondria start to wear out and die, but they don't quickly rejuvenate themselves. And that's why the older person gets, the less energy they have. How many times growing up did you say, well, that person's older, take it easy? Just the opposite. The older you get, the more active you must become, the more exercise you must do, the more you must stand and move. You shouldn't be sitting. You shouldn't be laying. You shouldn't be in a sedentary position. You actually are increasing the rate of dying. So we got it all wrong, got it absolutely backwards. We want people to take it easy, and they should be far more vigorous. So here's where the pomegranate comes in. There's a chemical in the pomegranate. It is called urothin, U-R-O, lithin, L-I-T-H-I-N-A. And it is prominent in the natural form within pomegranates. But it can be produced also synthetically, and the chemical has been tested and found that it helps tremendously with the cells. And it's terrific. So if you want to live a longer life, the takeaway message is have pomegranate every single day into your diet. It's helping your mitochondria. It's helping your energy. Aside from everything else it does, aside from turning off inflammation in your brain, aside from helping you if you've got glaucoma, aside if you have heart disease, aside if you have high blood pressure, aside if you have diabetes, it's helping the energy. More energy, more likely you're going to be able to exercise. At the beginning of the program, I mentioned the importance of onions. Well, I'm a big believer in the sweet onion, the Maui onion, the 1040 onion, the Vidalia onion, sweet onion. Now, here's how you make a sweet onion palatable. You cut it up, whether you want to dice it, slice it, and you run it under cold water for just maybe 20 seconds. That's all. What's that do? It eliminates some of the volatile oils that can be upsetting some people's stomach. So therefore, you get the sweetness and the phytonutrient value and the quercetin value, and it's great to have a nice cold onion diced up into brown rice that's been cooked. It changes the consistency and the mouthfeel. And by the way, next week, I'm going to be putting up on the screen some of my favorite recipes. I'm a gourmet chef, a vegan chef. I started the first gourmet vegan restaurant in America, The Fertile Earth, in 1972. And I have over 2,500 recipes I've created. I've written about 9 cookbooks. So I'm going to share them with you. It's my gift to you. The photographs, so you'll see how it should be plated, and the actual ingredients. So I'm going to be sharing some of these almost every day. So those of you who would like to shift over to a more exciting, exotic, tasty, because boring isn't in my life. It's not in my vocabulary. I like everything with a sense of spice. But the red onion also as a food helps you get there. So this University of Gulf in Ontario, they did a study of 5 different onions and found out that the red onion was the best at what? Killing cancer cells. That's right, killing cancer cells. But not all onions do that. And it also had the highest quantity of quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, quercetin. Always take vitamin C here and quercetin here, meaning double the amount of vitamin C. So if I take 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C, I'll take 1,000 milligrams of quercetin. And that's what helps keep your skin, you know, taut, healthy, gets rid of spider veins, varicosities, little purpley blue patches of veins in your feet. That's poor circulation. And it also helps your fingernails stay pink and hard and shiny instead of flecked and brittle and cracking. And it really helps your gums so your gums don't bleed. And a lot of people don't realize this, but most people have blood coming out of their gums. They just don't see it. It's not large amounts, but most people have recessed gums. They have some form of gingivitis or periodontal condition. And that's because they're lacking vitamin D and quercetin vitamin C. And so it's in their saliva. And it also means when you go to the dentist, which you should go twice a year and get checked, one of the first things that it does, they do a probe. They'll stick that little pointy thing right up into the gums, and they'll measure it and see, oh, you know, your gums are receding. Well, your gums are going to recede. You're going to lose those teeth. And then they'll check your jaw to see if you're decalcifying. So one of the ways you keep your gums healthy and stop the bleeding of the gums and heal bacteria is with quercetin. So red onions, have them as often as you can. And finally, watermelon and pomegranate juice show athletic benefits. This is in the University of Santa Lucia and the Catholic University of Murcia in Spain. It says, quote, watermelon juice enriched with citrulline combined with pomegranate extracts can reduce muscle soreness and markers of muscle damage following exercise. And this was published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. So the takeaway message is, if you're doing any form of aerobic exercise, have yourself a 16-ounce glass, 8 ounces before you exercise, 8 ounces after you exercise. I would add something to this, by the way. I would put in some coconut water, raw organic coconut water, watermelon juice, and pomegranate. And that way you're getting the benefit of all that, and therefore you're going to have less damage when you exercise. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you, and especially our Facebook. Thousands of people have been coming on each day to watch and listen to the program, and we welcome you. Please share this with other individuals. Next week, we'll have it so there will be video streaming on Progressive Radio Network, and then the following week, YouTube. And I want to thank the nearly 6 million people who downloaded our documentaries on YouTube and watched them. That's a lot of people. And our latest document, I want to mention this for a moment, latest documentary called Plant Codes is doing pretty well out there. In fact, I was told by one of our executive producers that it's the number one documentary in the world, winning documentary in the world. We've won all these major international film festivals, very prestigious ones. But here's the deal. With my schedule, I cannot, I don't have the time to run around the film festivals. I'd like to. They're a lot of fun. You meet some of the most interesting people at the international film festivals. So yesterday, I was informed that we are a finalist. We're in the final four of a very prestigious film festival in Maui, and I can't get there. That's way out in the middle of the Pacific. But someone in our audience who just attended a retreat from Australia happens to be there and is going to go there and be a part of it. And then someone also, I couldn't be at the Houston International Film Festival where we won Best of Festival, all the 400 films, Plant Codes was best. But someone in the audience who lives in Houston went there. So there's about 30 places around the world where we're a finalist, and if you would like to go in my place and enjoy a festival and then go to the awards presentation in case we get an award, you can go up on the stage and pick it up. Just don't sing. Don't tap dance. Don't get naked. I'm here for Gary. No, I'm going to. No, you got to be very cool. Here's some of the places where film festivals are going on. By the way, we won a Human Rights Film Festival, Doctors Without Borders, for Saving the Planet. And then the Global International Film Festivals, Hollywood Film Festival, the Honolulu, that's coming up. We're finalists in that. The Venice, this week or next week, the Venice Film Festival, we're finalists there. That's a very prestigious Venice Film Festival. The Los Angeles Film Awards, oh no, we won, that's over, that we won Best Documentary. The Barcelona in Spain, we're up for a finalist in that, in the environmental category. Central Florida Film Festival, the Long Island International Film Festival, the Madrid in Spain, the Madrid International Film Festival, Miami Film Festival, New York City Independent Film Festival, Stockholm, Sweden, as part of the Human Rights. We have Saving the Planet, Stockholm International Film Festival, and London Film Festival. So what I'll do is this. If you are in a place that I just mentioned, those, and you'd like to go and attend, you can just contact Valerie in our office, and I'll give you our number, 646-926-5422. I'm going to show you a little clip now. This is from a former, very respected and very successful pharmaceutical drug representative. Now, these are the people who go in and take their product from a pharmaceutical company and get the doctor to prescribe it. And they have all kinds of incentives and inducements. First, they're generally very attractive. They only select very attractive young men and young women. And then they give them huge budgets. I'll give you just an example of one who I recently filmed in San Francisco for a new film. And here's what she said. She was making about $500,000 a year, plus she had a gold credit card, plus she had any kind of car she wanted to rent or lease. She could. They paid for it. She would go into a doctor's office. And the first thing she did, she got the doctor's staff on her side. But she would go in and set up a whole free lunch where she'd get not just, you know, some crackers and sandwiches, but she would cater it from a well-known restaurant. So you were looking at a high-end lunch, far more than what a person would normally buy or spend who works in an office. But every day she'd be there catering it so the office staff could have anything they wanted. And then she gave the doctor and the doctor's wife an opportunity to go to Hawaii on a stay at a top resort, play golf. All they had to do is attend a a few hours a day of continuing education credit. And guess who was teaching the continuing education credit? The company's scientist promoting their drugs. They do it rather subtly. They don't come up and say, hi, you're all here for continuing education credit, wink, wink, nod, nod, but you're really here to buy my product, so buy my product. They don't do that. There's a certain inference that if someone has paid for a first-class airfare, first-class accommodations, and that's thousands and thousands of dollars per person, and they're giving you information on a new statin drug or a new drug for children, there's a high probability that you're going to be far more open to that drug detail person coming in. They also do this. A lot of doctor's offices have their own pharmacy. Yeah, the doctor is making the prescription, but then you can fill it right there in their own pharmacy. They do what's called restocking. They'll go in there, and they will work with the doctor's pharmacist or whoever's handling that, and they will restock at no charge to the doctor. Well, if you're getting a drug or drugs for free that you can sell for $200 or $300 for a bottle, what kind of incentive is that? And it's a big incentive. And then they also take them to dinners. And generally, it's the best restaurant in a town and or a Broadway show. So that's part of what these people do. And that's why they make huge salaries and commissions. And that's why it's a very coveted position. Well, here's someone who decided to look for the truth. Were the actual drugs working? Were they helping people? Or were they hurting people or killing people? Here's what she has to say.
My first involvement with the pharmaceutical industry was as a pharmaceutical sales rep for Merck back when Vioxx was on the market. And when I used to rep Vioxx for Merck, and when it came out that Merck had falsified safety data, and Vioxx actually had twice the increase in heart attacks and strokes, people taking it, it really made me realize that there was a lot of corruption behind the scenes, and that just because something is on the market, a drug is on the market, doesn't mean it's safe. So after working for Merck, I was pretty disillusioned over the whole scandal, and I lived in Europe for 8 years, and I had my son over there, and I brought him back vaccine-free at 6 months to San Francisco. And when I went to a well visit, they pushed for vaccines. And at that point, I hadn't done a lot of research in it, but I knew enough not to trust pharmaceutical drugs. And I asked to see a vaccine insert. And the doctor got very upset at me and claimed I didn't trust him. And he stormed out of the room. And the nurse let me know that I wasn't really welcome back in that clinic anymore. And that was a huge red flag for me, knowing what I knew from being a pharmaceutical sales rep before. And I started to do my research into vaccines and the ingredients and the flawed safety data. And what came to light was many things, but one of them was that aluminum is the main adjuvant in vaccines, in childhood vaccines. And I had experience with that, with researching that and the toxicity of aluminum, because my grandmother had breast cancer and the doctor biopsied her tissues and there were high levels of aluminum. And he told us that she needed to get off traditional deodorant and that the aluminum in there was linked to breast cancer. It was carcinogenic. So that was a big red flag for me when I realized those were in childhood vaccines. And I couldn't believe it, actually. And then I started to do more and more research, and I realized that the U.S. gives twice as many vaccines on the childhood schedule than most developed countries. And the real health crisis is the fact that our kids are sicker than any other country in the developed world. And this is despite spending more per capita on healthcare. So we have highest rates of SIDS, asthma, food allergies, ADHD, childhood leukemia, diabetes, type 1. And this, to me, was the true health crisis. So the more I dug into this, what I realized was vaccines are not for public health. It's really about profit, pharmaceutical company profit. And the thing about vaccines is that you don't have to do the same rigorous safety studies as you do for other pharmaceutical drugs, because they're classified as a public health measure versus a pharma drug. So for vaccines, they have a totally different type of safety study. It's very short in duration. It's not double-blind, placebo-based, which is the gold standard for pharmaceutical drugs. And vaccines aren't held to the same rigorous safety studies. So if you look into them, it's very easy to manipulate the data and present that as something that's safe. But if you really look into the studies and look into the toxicity of the adjuvants and the additives, you realize that the safety studies are not proving safety at all. In fact, there are a lot of studies on the other side showing that a lot of the additives in vaccines are very toxic, especially to children who have very immature immune systems. So as I dug more into the safety studies and saw how flawed they were, it really raised a red flag for me. And my son is now 4.5, and he's vaccine-free. And I really got motivated to get more into this fight when I realized the mandatory vaccination bills that were sweeping the country.
That's just to let you know that that is not the only person who represented the pharmaceutical industry who got out, looked back at what they had created and was sorry and disappointed, and is now coming forward to make some statements. We're going now in studio here, and I'm going to introduce you to Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello, Gary.
You've been receiving emails from people, and we like to get a variety of them so that no matter who's listening, hopefully my answer will be able to give them some insights.
Yes. I'll start with this one because we actually get quite a lot of this type of topic and it would help a lot of people. This is from Linda in Houston, Texas, and it's a bit personal. It's to you. Nowhere in your biography, videos or articles have you talked about your own personal relationships. Do you have one or not? And how difficult is it for you personally? Or am I wrong and you want to keep that part of your life private? She's just curious. And she says, recently I read an article about how difficult it is for very creative people to have the right kind of relationship. So, yes.
I don't talk about my own personal relationships. I believe that you're going to live a longer life and be healthier and happier if you have a quality relationship. The key is quality. And one of the mistakes we make is that from my generation, you were expected to get married out of high school or college, to buy a house, to have a family, to work at the same job for 20 or 30 years and then retire. You weren't expected to change, to challenge a system. You were simply to be a conformist to it. You were rewarded by the sense of knowing. Everyone knew you, could tell anyone else about you, because you never changed. But there are different types of people. There are different energies, like an artist, someone who's creative no matter what they create, whether it's sculpting or poetry, whether it's a playwright or a ballerina, whether they're an actor or a writer. They're using their imagination. They see things the average person doesn't see. We'll look at some trees and see trees. They'll look there and see something completely different that can be formed with those trees. We'll look at a blank canvas and we see a white blank canvas. They see a finished product. We look at marble, we see a rock. Michelangelo and sculptors see what is hidden inside and simply take the time to remove the debris so what they saw, what they personally saw, is revealed. And think of how wonderful the world is because of the creative person, what I call the creative assertive life force. Other people have different energies. Like an adaptive supportive life energy is a person that loves to solve problems. They tend to be engineers, foremen, mechanics. They love the challenge of finding something that's broken they can fix. And they tend to be more alone people, that they're not very gregarious by and large. They're not afraid of spending quality time alone. They tend to be more studious. They tend to be more academic. They tend to like to read. Like if you're going to look at their magazines, you'll see not People magazine, you'll see National Geographic, Popular Mechanics, New Science. And another type of life energy is the worker bee, the person that will work at the same job for 40 years. Like that's, I call that person an adaptive supporter. They adapt to their environment and they support it. And these people are very loyal, They have very few friends. Security is very important to them. Honoring that relationship is very important. That's why they tend to spend long times in relationship. And then you have the people that want to change the world, the dynamics, like a dynamic aggressive. Trump is a dynamic aggressive. And those people are the ones who can build a skyscraper. You and I are never going to build a skyscraper, but they can make that happen. And historically, they're the ones who end up ruling everyone. Now, if you're on your downside in a relationship, you see the worst of a person. If you're on your upside, you benefit from the best. The key I've found is harmonizing your energy, your ideals, your joys, your passions, your pleasures, your creativity with someone else where there's harmony, not conflict. I believe a lot of relationships end not because you got two bad people or one bad person. And instead of blaming one another, realize before you start a relationship what you really have in common. Not things that are coming off a resume in one of these stupid match services that don't work, but rather what you really are in love with. What do you love to do? Well, if you love gardening, if you love botany, if you love working with plants, then you shouldn't be working in an office. You should align yourself with that type, and if you have a relationship, that's a big part of you. I find that we make the mistake adapting to other people's needs instead of looking at what honors our own. So you want to get with someone that their needs and your needs are the same in a positive way. So there's not the conflict. There can be differences, fine, but there's not conflict. There's not this who said what and he said this and she said that. That is destructive. And once you start down that street, it doesn't end. It doesn't end positively. So I believe that we have made fundamental mistakes in the people we associate with, even with the best of intentions. And if you're not a dominant person, you sure as hell don't want a dominant person in your life, because everything will be you're subordinate, that person's dominant, and so you're not going to have any equality. Equality in a relationship doesn't mean 50-50. It means sharing the best that you can and feeling liberated by what you can share and what you can say without being condemned and corrected and put into your place, or always where someone has to win something. They got to have the last word. Anyone who needs the last word in a relationship shouldn't be in a relationship. All right? Relationships that work because they've harmonized their energy.
Yeah.
And they understand that everything you treasure in life, every person that you love, every pet that you have, everything that you value will probably be gone before you are. So we have to understand that everything in life has an expiration date. I remember once coming out of ABC on Sunday night, where I was their nutritionist for years and years and years. And I looked up and I saw the logo and I said, the day's going to come where I'm going to look up here and it'll be my last time looking at it. And about 7 years after that, one day I came out of the office and I said, I'm going to go do a nightly show that I wanted to do, 2 hours a night, over on WMCA, and I said goodbye. So I was appreciative of the fact I'd been given an opportunity, but now life had changed. You have to change with the changes in life. We're very reticent, especially the adaptive supportive. They don't like change. It terrifies them. That's why even when people are given good information and liberating information, healing information, life-saving information, it does not automatically mean they're going to change with that information. I know people would rather die of a heart attack than give up anything they've been used to or like. I see it all the time, including in my own friends. I just had another friend, lifelong friend, Neil Kramer, just passed. Wonderful guy. But he wasn't about to change his diet, even if it meant his life. And that's unfortunate because it frequently will. So when it comes to relationships, I believe relationships should be private, especially if you're a public person. Because what if the person you're having a relationship with, other people are jealous of that person? Then you've made them an object of other people's disdain. For those of us who are in the public eye, we accept that we're going to have people like us and other people dislike us, no matter what we are. But you should never bring your partner into the public view, because what you share should be personal and private, and there should be a trust that whatever you do share is with the two of you. So, am I in a relationship? No. But if I were, I wouldn't tell you. All right? Because it's no one's business.
Exactly.
All right? Well, unless you're stupid enough, and a lot of people are, to go out with someone who's going to tell everyone everything that they know about you. And if you're famous, that's almost always going to be the case. So therefore, if I were going to go out with a stranger, I would invite that person, all that person's friends, all their coworkers and their family, all to come. And just to be quiet and be right beside us all night so they could see what was actually said and done.
Yeah.
All right? And so the person says, well, I feel uncomfortable. Why, well, you're going to tell them all anyhow tomorrow. You're not going to, you're going to betray everything. And if you have sex, bring them. Bring the whole family and set up bleachers right beside the bed. So all your family can be there while you're having sex. And you look over and say, is this all right? The grandmother says, no, I'm a strict Catholic. That is not all right. What if we both got on top? It's safe sex. I tell you, people do not understand the power of joy and healing with a relationship that's right, and the power of destruction if it's wrong. Don't hold on to a relationship that's not working for you. It's not worth it. Say goodbye. Wish them well. No animosity. No vengeance. No violence. No retribution. Because then, like the Chinese say, those who seek revenge must dig two graves, one for the person they're trying to hurt and one for themselves, because nobody benefits from that. I hope that answers your question.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Good. Now, we don't have time for others because I took so much time with that, and I want to get to this other issue, but we'll save all the others. How can people reach you if they'd like to have their situation discussed on air?
Yes. The email address is prnstudio@gmail.com, which is PRN, Progressive Radio Network Studio, @gmail.com. Should I?
PRN?
Yes.
Dot?
No, just prnstudio@gmail.com.
Okay.
All one
Thanks.
Word.
Okay. All right. That was Elizabeth, and you can write your comments. Now, I'm going to show you a very short clip from the man who founded the Weather Channel. He is what I would personally consider a climate denialist. Yet he's very popular, especially in the conservative and republic movements and the libertarian movements who don't believe, many of them don't believe in, that climate change is real and that we have anything to really worry about. Here's what he has to say on CNN.
I resent you calling me a denier. That is a... I resent you calling me a denier. That is a word meant to put me down. I'm a skeptic about climate change. And I want to make it darn clear, Mr. Kenney's not a scientist. I am. He's the CEO of the Weather Channel now. I was the founder of the Weather Channel, not the co-founder.
And I'm glad you did, because I am addicted to the Weather Channel. I watch a lot of cable news.
I'm talking now. Hold on just a minute. I'm not done. And CNN has taken a very strong position on global warming that it is a consensus. Well, there is no consensus in science. Science isn't a vote. Science is about facts. And if you get down to the hard, cold facts, there's no question about it. Climate change is not happening. There is no significant man-made global warming now. There hasn't been any in the past, and there's no reason to expect any in the future. There's a whole lot of baloney. And yes, it has become a big political point of the Democratic Party and part of their platform. And I regret it's become political instead of scientific. But the science is on my side.
I don't think we're going to come to a conclusion about the topic right here. What I do wonder, though, is when you see...
Because you wouldn't allow it to happen on CNN, but I'm happy that I got on the air and got a chance to talk to your viewers. Hello, everybody. There is no global warming.
What I do wonder is when you see the government, when you see NASA...
All right, that's his perspective, and he says he's a scientist. Well, sir, I'm also a scientist. I'm a PhD in human nutrition and public health science. I have published over 700 articles, over 100 books, including textbooks, and also done original research as a research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and Anti-Aging Medicine. I've also done more broadcasts on environmental issues than any other radio program in the world, and written extensively on the topic, including articles on environment and what causes global warming. So I'd like to offer a rebuttal to your saying there's no science. This is current. New study shows Arctic melting approaching unstoppable. Tipping point, that's from the German Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. The price to be paid for not cutting emissions of greenhouse gases could mean driving the planet across planetary boundaries or the tipping points. This is from Climate News Network. World already teetering on tipping points for abrupt climate changes from the Institute of Governance and Sustainable Development. Global glaciers melting up to three times faster than in the 20th century. And this is the World Glacier Monitoring Service and the University of Zurich. Alarming year of extremes as climate tipping points loom from the World Meteorological Organization. And by the way, in the last 12 months, we've had more than 12,000 extreme weather events, 12,000 in the United States, over 120,000 worldwide. And I'll get to some of how bad it is across the planet. In fact, the hottest ever recorded in Norway, happening right now in Bahrain now, in several other countries as we speak, including in Iran. They had 131 degrees, and that's the hottest ever recorded in that country. And we also have had the warmest 9 years out of the last 10 years in recorded history. Also, we have the West Antarctic ice shelf is breaking up from the inside out. Researchers trace the origins of the iceberg to a crack that formed deep beneath the ice, the American Geological Research. And how close is that to breaking off? Probably within the next week. It only has a few miles to go, and that means 120 mile long, almost a mile deep, and 300 feet wide iceberg the size of Delaware will break off, and that means that there is nothing holding back. Here's the Antarctic shelf. There's two primary glaciers. The one on the west tip where the Larsen Sea shelf is, it holds it. Now, that breaks away and becomes an iceberg. Nothing stops the rest of that ice from going directly into the water, and that's where you're going to have ocean rising, and it won't be gradual. Once this feedback loop starts, it's like a snowball going down a giant mountain. By the time it's halfway down, it's huge in size, has a velocity, and nothing can stop it. That's what's going to happen. And overnight, you're going to have increases in water that we've never had. And it's going to flood inlands. It's going to flood aquifers with salt water. It's going to flood over 165 million people living at the ocean right now. You're going to see major flooding. Forget Miami. Miami is going to be a ghost town. It's dead. And as will be other communities, including Lower Manhattan. So you're in denial of all that, but the science is there. Also, strong geothermal heating measured beneath West Antarctic ice shelf, University of California, Santa Cruz, meaning we never thought that there were volcanic issues underneath Antarctica, but there is. That means from underneath that ice, it's heating up from underneath, not just on top. Also, surge in methane emissions threatened effects efforts to slow global change, the American Geophysical Union. Methane spewing U.S. leaked to linked to global surge of potent greenhouse gases, Harvard University. This melting glacier in Antarctica could raise sea levels by 11 feet. And mind you, for every foot that the sea comes up, you're losing over 100 feet inland. So you're looking at over 1,000 feet is going to be completely flooded. That means aquifers that are in there are going to be flooded. Also, the world already teetering on tipping points for abrupt climate change, Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development. The Chinese glacier retreats signal trouble in Asian water supply from the Chinese government. You may not know it, but seven of the largest waterways in the world, some of the great rivers like the Ganges, the Yellow River, they come from the Himalayas. And they divert. They go down into different countries. But India and China get their water from there. They're drying up. In fact, it used to be that you would go to a certain elevation, there would be a giant lake. Not now. Those aquifers are drying up. In some cases, you have to walk as much as a mile from where you used to be able to get water to get water. That means there's less and less and less water going into the rivers and more people needing that water. And now in India, you have rivers there that are very turgid, meaning they're very thick because, and you see the methane bubbles coming up from decaying corpses, decaying debris, and they don't have the filtration systems. You go to any of the cities in China, or excuse me, and also in China, but also in India, they don't have clean water. Half of all the rivers in China are now gone. And the ones they do have are so toxic, you can't even use the water to fertilize. The world already teetering on the tipping points from brusque climate change, Institute for Governance and Sustainable Development. Then you have climate change could flip the Mediterranean lands to desert. Now think of that. And this from the European Center for Geoscience Research. That means that Spain, Madrid, Greece, and all the other countries that are in that area, including those North Africa, could all become deserts. Well, where are all those people supposed to go? The biggest single migration in the future will not be from political issues and civil war like it is now in Syria and other countries. It's going to come, like Maui, it's going to come from people not having food to eat, and they can't grow anything because when the sun gets too hot, seeds die. You can't grow anything. So, plus we have scientists are clear, big winter storms influenced by warming planet, University of Illinois at Urbana. Giant Mideast dust storm caused by changing climate, not human conflict. Princeton University Engineering School. By the way, that happened to have been the largest sandstorm ever recorded in history. And that was in the Middle East. Covered three whole countries, entire countries covered with the same sandstorm. Now, do you know what a sandstorm will do at about 13 miles an hour? It can take the paint off a car. It can take the skin off your body. That's the new normal. And we're also seeing sandstorms in Arizona that we've never seen before, that kills all vegetation, rips all the plants apart, flowers, fruit trees, decimated. We used to have dust storms. Now we have sandstorms, and sand's a lot worse because of desertification. Antarctic greening due to climate change, University of Exeter. Dust Bowl would obliterate modern crops, University of Chicago. By the way, we are now returning to the great dust storms of the 1930s. Which means that in Kansas, Colorado, Indiana, Missouri, our Illinois, our breadbasket, dust storms that we've never seen before are happening. And historically, we've seen them in Oklahoma, Nevada, South Dakota, Idaho. Now you're seeing them in the breadbasket. So let's see what happens when you hear one night on the weather that there was a dust storm. And where's the dust go? It lands on plants. What happens there? It destroys the plants. Well, that's not like you can just clean it off. You can't clean the dust off once it's on these plants. It could be 2, 3, 4 inches thick. It means that you're going to have kids with massive lung infections and adults as well. It means senior citizens will be dying because that dust gets in their lungs, as it did in the 1930s, and you can die from that. It means that land now, you're not going to be able to plant anything on, because why would you invest all your money in seeds to plant something when it could be flooded by excessive rain in the spring and it could be hit by dust storms or sandstorms in the summer or fall? So that's what's happening. New York City can expect more 9-foot floods, Rutgers University. Almost biblical, amazing 3,000-foot dust storm shrouds Phoenix. 3,000 feet high, 30 miles wide cloud blanketed Phoenix, Daily Mail. Unprecedented mass die-off at the Pacific Ocean, quote, turning it into a desert off California coast, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That's not the National Enquirer. That's one of our most respected scientific bodies on climate. And over 100 million salmon recently, in the last 2 months, dead. Also, sea lions, sea pups dying of malnutrition. All forms of whales, walruses, and orcas dying because the fish they would normally eat are dying because those smaller fish, that we're living their whole lives off coral reefs. The coral reefs are bleaching. The acidification of the oceans is so complete that they're creating dead zones where no oxygen exists. So all those fish that needed oxygen are dying, and those were food sources. So the creatures have to go further and further north or further and further south towards Antarctica or towards Alaska to get their food. Many are dying in the process. And California is turning back into a desert, and there are no contingency plans. NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And finally, U.S. faces floods of climate refugees, University of Georgia. Now, I have nine more pages, but because we're out of time, I will hold those. And that doesn't even get to the real problems that I'm going to discuss in a one-hour presentation on Tuesday evening after our Progressive Commentary Hour. And then the solutions. And we do have solutions. We have things that we as individuals can do. And I'm also going to be suggesting things that we can force our politicians to do. So I'm not a nihilist. I'm a realist. I'm a pragmatist. I look at the problem. I don't apologize for it. I don't disguise it, deny it, hide it, or walk away from it. Because any problem in life you choose not to engage will still be there at some point to meet you. And that's, unfortunately, a toxic karmic lesson for all of us. So for those of you who stay engaged in climate denialism, and on my next program, I'm going to list the different organizations that engage in climate denialism. And some you're going to be shocked by, because I found out who their sponsors are, who gives them money, and who pays them money, then the issues they won't talk about, including the issues of the people that manufacture something that creates pollution, greenhouse gases, but they'll give a large check, $10 million, $20 million, and suddenly that very respected environmental institution has nothing to say. And if you think that Leonardo DiCaprio and Al Gore have got the answers, and Bill McKibben, they have some solutions, but it's all about corporatization and capitalization. It's all about making money from it. And it's not reasonable. It's not going to work. But they'll live in their illusions, and we'll try to live in a different reality. I'm Gary Noll. Thank you all for watching, and I look forward to sharing more on the next program tomorrow. Have a nice day.